Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 4th and Goal podcast. Today is our 6th episode, and I'm Caden Johnson, joined by my co-hosts Braden Friedman and Nicholas Elliott. We have a lot to cover today. We have a Week 11 recap, Player of the Week, obviously, and then we're going to get into our positional rankings for the season so far, and that's QBs, running backs, wide receivers. Going to talk a little bit about the Heisman and, of course, the preview for next week. So, obviously, first things first, next week we won't have an episode because of Thanksgiving, obviously, but we should be back for the week after that for the last episode of the show. So let's just enjoy it while we're here, boys, right?
That's right.
Yep.
Bring it to the people.
Yeah. So we're going to start with the Week 11 recap. We have the SEC Championship being set. Georgia-LSU. LSU edges out Arkansas to end Alabama fans' hopes and dreams if they weren't ended already. What do you guys think about this SEC championship game? Is there any chance that LSU could potentially shock the world?
I mean, there's always the chance that someone could shock the world, but I think Georgia is so much better than LSU. I think the way that they play football is so much more perfect. I mean, Georgia almost plays perfect football. They've had a couple rough games this year, but every time I watch Georgia play, it feels like they rarely make mistakes, and LSU kind of sometimes makes mistakes. They have a good defense. Georgia's defense is better than LSU's defense, though. So I think Georgia's pretty easily going to beat LSU.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, Georgia's got so many playmakers on offense. I mean, Darnell Washington, Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey. I mean, that's just to name a few. I mean, I don't think LSU's DBs are going to be able to handle guard in a Brock Bowers type player. I mean, Harold Perkins is probably going to have like a 6 or 7 sack game to keep him in it.
Don't underestimate DBU.
I mean,
yeah, DBU. Really.
DBU.
Completely agree, though, that, I mean, in order for LSU to have any sort of chance, they're going to have to pressure the quarterback. Stetson Bennett, if he has time, especially time in the pocket, yep, he is going to do what he's done all year, and that's deliver some dimes and absolutely torch that LSU defense.
It could be a high-scoring game still.
Daniels
has been phenomenal for LSU.
For sure. I definitely think that they have the style of offense that could give Georgia's defense some trouble.
Yep.
If it gets to that point. So, but anyways, moving on to the Bama game, you know, even though it was a top 11 matchup, the game didn't really matter too much. I guess it kind of mattered for Ole Miss, right? So if they would have won and then LSU would have lost to A&M, then Ole Miss would have got in. But Bama went on the road to Oxford and took down Ole Miss. Great defensive performance, really. What do you guys think about this one?
Yeah, our defense looked pretty good in that game, I think. Watching the first half of the game made me even more wanting to part ways with Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
I was not happy with the way that our offense was being run. It just felt like we would throw a pass play, be incomplete, second and long, run the ball, stop every time. That's pretty much how we ran the first half. Kind of showed that our offense, we came back in the second half to look a lot better. But, I mean, that game, I guess, mattered for our New Year's Six Bowl hopes, because if we didn't win that, I mean, all these games matter now if we want to be in Miami.
Yeah, no, if we didn't win that game, we'd be looking at like a Citrus Bowl.
Outback Bowl.
Yeah, Outback Bowl. It would be dark times.
It'd be dark times. It would be like 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Byron Young really made his presence known on the defensive line. He had a couple big sacks late, and I thought Quinshon Judkins had another big game. I mean, huge game for them. Jackson Dart played pretty good. I mean,
he played all right. He used his legs good.
Yeah,
so.
He had
his face
runs.
Mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs going down in the second half. Jace McClellan really had a big game there.
Yeah.
He was just running like a bowling ball, and I mean, nobody was stopping him. I thought he played very good.
So one thing to note about this Alabama game that I just feel like is pretty interesting is just, like, this is – it's kind of setting in for me as an Alabama fan that, like, we're really just not a dominant team this year. You know, we just don't dominate teams. And it's just we get presented with time and time again with teams that, you know, are talked about throughout the week as maybe they can compete with Alabama. And we just don't have that old Alabama team flair when we come out and just surprise the world and win by 35, you know. Texas A&M, Texas, Ole Miss, Tennessee,
LSU,
all these games that
you would see
like traditional Alabama teams come out in some of these games, not all, but in some of these games just win by 30, you know, just light them up. And
yeah,
just...
I remember last year going into the Ole Miss game at home, everyone was all worried about losing mm-hmm. Ole Miss, and I think it was 40-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
Yeah, the theme with all those games, they were all the teams had the ball last. We did not control the possessions well at the end.
Yeah, outside of Texas. Texas, yeah, the one, game, that's Texas. One time so that we do we get the ball control. Last. Yeah, and Bryce Chung obviously made stuff happen, as per usual for Bryce.
I mean, I guess you could say in Tennessee we should have had the ball last.
Yeah, really. Yeah. But, oh, well. Great. It's still not a bad season by any means for Alabama. They've had a terrible schedule, and it feels like almost all of their tough games they've had to play on the road. Yeah.
Yeah, next year. You know,
next year with Texas, I think we have Texas, Tennessee, LSU, Tennessee,
that's,
Ole Miss.
That's going to help a lot.
Arkansas all at home.
Tough road games would be like A&M and Auburn.
Yep.
But moving on to the east here of the SEC, we have Vanderbilt getting an SEC win over Kentucky. They snap a 26-game losing streak against SEC opponents.
It's big
is
time.
The future looking up for Mike Wright and company at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I mean, big time for Clark Lee to get his first SEC win. I mean, that was a 26-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough game to watch. It was like snowing, I'm pretty sure, in that game.
Yeah, it was. A little bit of snow there at the end, especially.
Yeah, that was a dominant running performance by them. Kentucky, yeah. though, has been... has not done what everybody thought they were doing, especially Will Levis has just been struggling.
Yeah.
His offensive line has not just been giving him any time.
Such a disappointing team.
Yeah, they're very disappointed.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, Kentucky looked like an elite contender, possibly for the East, and that kind of their hopes of that really slipped away. But I think Vanderbilt's future is probably looking up. First win, 26 years in conference. 26 game, not 26.
26
years. It feels like 26 years. I can't remember the last time Vandy's won a SEC game, but could have just been a slip up from Kentucky. But Vandy didn't look bad against anyone this year.
Yeah, I don't know if it's crazy to say that Vanderbilt may not be the worst team in the SEC this year.
Yeah, they might not be.
Like,
yeah.
We're getting to the point where Texas A&M is bad enough to where Texas A&M really and truly might be the worst team.
And if Auburn had lost that game last week, you could have said it was Auburn.
I mean,
Auburn.
You could say both
exactly.
of them.
Yeah.
I
say all three.
Yeah. I mean, that was a 13-10 game. I mean, they didn't even have Achane or Evan Sewer had a concussion in the second half.
Yeah. I completely agree with
or
that.
Or Malik Muhammad, he didn't even play because he had an arm sleeve on. I mean,
yeah,
that was pretty,
that's right.
Glad we kind of switched over to Auburn because that poses the next subject. We get Auburn getting their first win with Cadillac at coach. Does he have a future as their head coach? Like is there a real shot that Cadillac could be the next head coach at Auburn?
Probably not. But
yeah, I would say no because he doesn't really have any SEC. I mean, he has experience as an assistant coach, but not really had any head coaching experience at all.
I think if they beat Alabama, that's going to help his odds. But I'm not rooting for that at all.
Yeah.
I want to see.
He just needs the experience, and Auburn's. I mean, SEC job's no easy. You can't have a first year coach in general as a head coach running an SEC program, especially Auburn with all the behind-the-scenes stuff they have to go through.
Yeah, and it feels like Auburn is really making some noise in the coaching game.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that they're probably getting looked at by more big names than any other coaching vacancy right
Definitely
now.
Definitely
the
top job. I mean, they just opened a brand-new like a $95 million facility last week, so that's certainly helping.
Yeah, Auburn's looking on the uprise again. I kind of miss when they were good. Closer games in the Iron Bowl.
I don't mind them having a few down years every year.
Every now and then,
yeah. I do think that Cadillac would be a good culture fit for Auburn, and I do think that he needs to remain on the staff and maybe even, like, give him a little bit of a promotion. But I don't know if the head coaching job is really for him. You know, you would definitely have some questions about defensively. They would definitely need, like, a very good defensive coordinator.
Yes.
Moving out of the SEC, though, we've been on it for a minute. We're going to switch it up, go to some Group of Five talk. We got UCF winning the battle of the top Group of Five teams this week. They took down Tulane. Can this UCF team win a New Year's Six Bowl? Not just make one, but win one.
I think they could. I mean, especially with opt-outs, especially like the Power Five schools having a ton of opt-outs. I think John Rhys-Plumlee could pull out one. I mean, Gus Malzahn coaching masterclass yet again for that UCF team. I mean, it'll just come down to the for their conference championship, really, if they rematch with Tulane for who gets that last spot.
Yeah, I think that obviously conference championship beating someone twice. I always think that beating someone twice is a lot hard. Usually does not happen. I think UCF has a chance of winning a New Year's Six Bowl if they're just. It all depends who they're matched up against. If they get matched up against maybe Penn State, their odds are a lot higher. If they get matched up against someone like maybe Oregon, who could find their way into it, still a New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah, and I completely agree with Nick. It kind of feels like whatever school they play will kind of determine whether or not they win. Like, if you play a school that doesn't normally get to a New Year's Six Bowl, maybe like TCU, a school that's going to take pride in being there, then TCU will probably win by a good bit. But, however, you play a team maybe like Clemson or Alabama-type team that doesn't really care about being there at a New Year's Six Bowl. It doesn't mean anything to the program. You're going to see a lot of opt-outs from those teams, and those are the type of games that I think UCF is going to capitalize on. And I do think that right now, like, the majority of teams that are on that New Year's Six slate, I would pick UCF over just because of that. You know, that's like their Super Bowl for them. So
yeah, they would come out with their entire starting roster.
Yeah, exactly. There's absolutely nobody's going to be opting out for Central Florida for that game. Sticking in the group of five here, we have UConn. How about UConn? Bowl eligible. They end Liberty's New Year's Six Bowl hopes, more than likely, handing Liberty their second loss of the year the week after beating Arkansas. So that's pretty weird. But I guess that is what the committee saw in them, and that's why Liberty just didn't get ranked. But as for UConn, Jim Mora, he's kind of turned the program around a little bit. This is a different UConn program. You think Jim Mora has any chance of being the next hire out of the group of five?
Maybe, like, I wouldn't say this year, maybe next year, but it all just depends because he's only his first year at UConn. I mean, there's still like six wins, I mean, which is like probably like a coach of the year candidate, in my opinion, especially with how bad UConn's been. I mean, maybe if like a Mitch Leipold takes a job somewhere and Kansas opens up, I could see Jim Mora going to Kansas or something, some like small Power Five school.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that Jim Mora, anytime you turn a program around like that, with how bad UConn really has been over the last few years. But he's just at the beginning of his time there, so maybe he sticks around a year or two. But definitely expect him to be a big name in a couple of years at a big school.
I agree, and I think that if you see even more success from UConn next year, maybe let's go as far as they win like eight games, maybe nine next year.
Maybe even New Year's Six eligibility.
Yeah, I think that UConn...
maybe.
We're shooting for the moon here for UConn. But yeah, I do think that Jim Mora will stick around another year. Say he goes like 8-4, 9-3 at the best. Then he could be getting a job soon, a big job soon. Moving on to the Big 12, speaking of coaches, we have a bad loss for Oklahoma against West Virginia, and Brent Venables obviously not really on the hot seat this year. You can't expect too much out of him. It's a completely different system. He's got to get his guys in. But how hot will that seat be going into next year for Brent Venables?
It is going to be on fire.
Yes,
agree. OU fans expect victories. They expect making it to the playoffs. They expect New Year's Six bowls. They have that winning culture, that same expectation that Alabama fans have, that Clemson fans have, that Georgia fans have, that's been built at Oklahoma. And when they aren't at that top tier, they got a quick trigger. And I know that Oklahoma's had a lot to deal with their entire coaching staff pretty much going to USC over the offseason, but
Lots of players as well.
Yeah, their entire recruiting class decommitting and going to USC pretty much.
Especially in 2 years, they're entering the SEC. If he doesn't have a good year next year, I think he might be gone.
Yeah, and I would go as far as to say, like, they need to have a great year next year.
Yeah, they need like a 9-3, 10-2
year. Yeah, even if Oklahoma goes 8-4 next year, he could be out, like, really. Yep. Yeah, and the other thing is, too, you got to give some slack to first-year coaches, but when it's a program like Oklahoma, five losses is pretty unexcusable. Like, being 5-5 is rough, and they could go down to 5-6 this week. And especially, you don't lose games against West Virginia's. Like, you don't lose games to teams like that if you're a program like Oklahoma. They've established a reputation for themselves that I mean, is up there with some of the other top schools like Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State over the recent years.
Yeah, I mean, Brent Venables still has to fix that defense. That defense was nowhere close to where he had it at Clemson. I think next year he'll probably get some of his guys in. At least, I mean, this recruiting cycle is huge for him, especially if he's entering next season on the hot seat.
Yep, completely agree. And, as for Oklahoma, I kind of think about it like this. Since I talked about Oklahoma being on the stage with those big programs, like, I wouldn't expect Clemson or Ohio State or Bama to bring in a new coach and lose 5 or 6 games the first year. You know, that's just kind of inexcusable. You know, you can kind of cut him some slack if he goes 8-4, 9-3, but this is an Oklahoma team that could be like 6-6. I mean, really.
Yeah.
But anyways, as for the Big 12, it looks like TCU is just by far the best team. This is a TCU team. I mean, you can call them lucky, you can call it a fluke, but they just keep winning, man.
Doubted them.
Yeah, really.
You've been doubting them.
Is TCU
since we started the show?
Would you guys start to border on calling TCU a playoff lock?
They've got to beat someone twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're gonna have to beat someone twice.
I still think. I mean, I think their chances are pretty high. I mean, much better than I thought they would have been. I mean, if they can get through Baylor, and I mean, Baylor won't be easy as a 6-win, 7-win team. I mean,
I do think that they are going to go through the regular season without a loss, though.
Yeah, that is definitely not ridiculous to say that. I know they have Baylor this weekend. Who is their final regular season game? Got to pull that up real quick.
Yep.
Whip out Google.
Yeah, because I do know that several people are talking
about Iowa State.
Okay, so they should be 12-0. They really should be. I think Baylor had a good chance to upset them, or I was leaning towards that until I saw last week's game. Baylor got absolutely tramped by Kansas State. So, yeah, I do think that TCU will.
So almost,
I'm about 90% sure they'll go undefeated. It would be the most Big 12 thing ever, though, for TCU to lose to like Iowa State. Yeah.
Or just get blown out in the championship.
Yeah. Kansas State just beats them by like 4 touchdowns.
I thought they played.
I could see that happening.
Yeah, I could too.
They played fantastic. I mean, their defense really shut down that Texas offense. Quinn Ewers
looked awful.
He did not.
Really bad. And that's good for – I think that's great for TCU fans, that type of game, the 17-10 type of game. I mean, like, look at it like this. Your defense just won you a game. That's been your biggest question all year, and they just went out and won you a game. Probably one of the biggest games of the year. The biggest game of the year.
Sonny Dykes is definitely coach of the year.
100%. I think
1,000%.
I mean, this is his first year going in.
First year undefeated through this. Yeah. I mean, pretty much guaranteed a New Year's Six Bowl at this point.
Wild. Yeah. And it makes you think, too, when Oklahoma and Texas leave, is TCU going to be like the powerhouse in the Big 12?
Yeah,
like,
probably them and Baylor.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Texas each year with Sarkisian is going to have a better recruiting class, though.
Yeah, but they'll be
SEC. Yeah, but I'm talking about when Texas and Oklahoma go to the
SEC.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Oh, I always forget. That's going to be so weird.
Yeah, that's just
That's
so
why
weird
if Oklahoma doesn't have a good year next year, especially with them coming in the year after that, they would.
Yeah. It just slipped my mind at the moment of conversation.
Yeah. And we have another conference championship that's set here. It is the ACC championship, Clemson versus UNC. Guys, is it starting to look more and more like UNC might even be the favorite for this game?
I think it's the year of Carolina Blue.
Yeah.
It's just Clemson's offense is just not very good. It's DJ. I mean, you can't win a game with DJ.
No, I think that UNC's offense, like we talked about it last week, it's either going to be who's going to crumble first, and that defense is just more likely to crumble than I think Clemson's defense has crumbled. I mean, they crumbled against Notre Dame. I think that they're probably going to crumble against North Carolina, Drake May. And
UNC's defense, I mean, I was watching that game. They got some stops against Wake Forest and Sam Hartman.
They did. Down the stretch. That's a good offense. That's very good.
I mean, and their offense was just scoring at will.
And I'll even admit that I expected UNC to win that game. I picked UNC.
Yeah.
But I also expected Wake Forest to score more points than that. Like, I really did think both teams might score 50, you know.
Yeah, that was very
Their defense looked very good.
I would even go go as far as saying UNC holding Wake to 33 might even be impressive almost.
That was very impressive.
Yeah. So
Josh Downs had a huge game.
Yeah, Josh Downs did have a great game. He's one of the best wide receivers in the country, obviously. And as for Clemson, though, and really both of these teams, how real are both of these teams' playoff hopes?
I mean,
they need like anarchy to happen.
Yeah,
they don't need Tennessee that much anarchy.
They probably need Tennessee to lose because Tennessee's resume is probably better than both of theirs.
I think they would need TCU to lose.
They do need TCU.
They need
to lose,
TCU 100%. To lose, and then they need USC to lose.
They probably need TCU to lose in the conference championship.
TCU needs to lose in the conference championship, and then Ohio State and Michigan.
The committee's just disrespecting them because, 9-13 for one-loss teams. We still have Alabama, two-loss team ahead of them.
That's the committee does not respect the ACC.
They think Alabama has a better chance to get in than both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. But as for, USC, if you say USC and Clemson went out, who has the better resume than USC or Clemson?
I think
who's the better team then?
USC has a couple tough games in the next two weeks.
Yeah, I'd say USC probably has a better resume.
I think so, too.
Because they would have that win against Notre Dame, which is a common opponent between the two.
Yeah.
And they'd have probably, three ranked wins now because Wake Forest, they're not ranked. Syracuse is not ranked.
Syracuse is bad, too, by the way. Yeah. I think we've determined that. Syracuse is not good. They got absolutely blown out by Florida State, and they've lost, three or four straight games.
That Florida State win is looking pretty good for Clemson, though.
Yeah, Syracuse is it's a quality win, but that's not a big win by any means for Clemson, especially because it was at home. And they should have lost that game, too. They got a little bit of help. So, but moving on to the Pac-12, as per usual, the Pac-12 kind of beats themselves up out of a playoff race. Out of the realistic playoff race, USC still has a shot, but it's not the best chance in the world for USC. The Pac-12 really hurt their playoff hopes this weekend. We had Washington beating Oregon in Autzen, and we had UCLA just collapsing to a bottom feeder Arizona team. As for Oregon, do you think this Oregon team got really overrated, or do you think Washington just fell really under the radar?
I think Washington fell under the radar. I think a lot of people did not know how good Washington really was. Michael Penix, and I forget the running back's name. I remember hearing it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But, their offense is definitely good. We were talking about the over for that game, and we weren't really estimating how good Washington's offense was, and Oregon's defense did not look good at all. A couple bad plays at the end of the game, too. Very last play.
Poor clock management.
Yeah. The illegal touching on the last play of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Washington was underrated. Oregon was just, they were still winning. They had a good win streak going for them. I think everybody doubted Michael Penix when he transferred to Washington. They all thought he was going to be bad just because how last year went at Indiana, but he's really been fantastic. He's probably shot up the radar. Probably back on draft stock, got his name back on the draft radar. Especially after,
I would say so for sure. Yeah. He's had such a weird career. He was he turned Indiana around, and then just had an abysmal year, and then now he's back at Washington. So and he's playing great. He's really playing probably a top 10 QB in the country this year. So. That's great for him. Washington, I agree 100%. They were a little bit underrated. Oregon, I don't know if they were overrated or not, really. I still think that this Oregon team is very good.
It just depends on the rest of the season for Oregon.
Yeah,
they've got Utah this week. Utah's a team that Oregon has struggled with over the last couple of years.
Yeah, new coaching with them, though. And, next week's game won't be easy, especially the Oregon State rivalry game.
Yeah.
Oregon State's a solid team.
Yeah, rivalry games always bring out close games.
Yeah, and Oregon State, Nick said, Oregon State's a
quiet team.
Not a team you can just run over. I want to say, aren't they even ranked now?
They found themselves in the rankings a couple times. Yeah. I don't think they're ranked
I don't think
right
they're
now.
Ranked now because Washington beat them. I'm checking. They're not ranked right now. They're 7-3 right now.
It's a team that could be ranked by the end of the year, especially if they beat Oregon. So,
oh wait, they are ranked 23.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I thought they climbed back in this week, but
yeah, that's still it. They've had it. They must beat USC. They had it done.
Yeah, so that Oregon State team is definitely no pushover for Oregon. As for UCLA, man, I don't even know what to say. That is just I've gotten on here, I've gotten on the radio, I've defended UCLA with all I have, and then they just go out and do that against Arizona in Pac-12 after dark.
Yeah, their defense just did nothing that game. They let Arizona was just Jaden DeWar was just running in the pocket the whole time and just. They were getting chunk plays of the chunk plays, and then their running back Wally, he was just destroying them too. I mean,
their defense did not look good at all that game. Their offense on the last drive of the game with poor clock management.
Yeah,
just you can't go for four shots to the end zone and expect a touchdown. I mean, it came close at the last play of the game again. Another one that came down the last play of the game. But, I mean, they got to get the crowd back into it. I don't know how you could be a one-loss team and have no crowd energy about football.
It's sad. It really is. Like, it's sad. I get that they have a good basketball program. People want to go support that. But, I mean, your football program.
The argument is that it's an hour away from the campus. But, when you're that good for the first time in however long UCLA has been.
Again, you got a coach who's made it to a national championship and he's coached in the NFL.
UCLA's on the uprise too. It's just they've got to get the crowd energy to feed off of in those close games.
Yeah, we'll see how that crowd does this week when they play USC at home. Yeah,
it's going to be a red crowd.
I think so too. I definitely think so too. As for this USC team, I mean, I think are we all in agreement that USC could win out and probably be in the playoffs?
Their resume would be far and better than probably. I mean, they had that one loss, too, which carries tons of weight, but their resume would be the best in the Pac-12, and it would be probably – I mean, if they win that non-conference game next week against Notre Dame, that's a huge boost on that resume.
My thing is I would even go as far as to say that – I mean, they would have – if they won their conference championship, they would have a better resume
– Than Michigan.
Than whoever loses the game, than Michigan or Ohio State.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would sure. 100% agree with that. So – moving into our player of the week, we talked about him in the Pac-12 after dark. I'm going with Jaden DeLore, quarterback out of Arizona. He went 22 for 28, had 315 yards, 3 total touchdowns, 2 passing, 1 rushing. And, of course, Arizona, the bottom feeder of the Pac-12, the very bottom, pulling out the big dub against UCLA. Huge win for the program and just absolutely kills UCLA's playoff chances.
I'm going with the opposite of the after dark. I'm going with the 11 a.m.
New
the 11 a.m. LSU, Harold Perkins Jr.
Absolute dog.
I mean, 4 sacks. I've never. Yeah. I might be one of the best defensive performances of all time. Not just college football. NFL.
What, 2 forced fumbles, right?
Yeah, 2 forced fumbles too. I mean, isn't he a freshman too?
Probably one of the best pass rushers since Chase Young, probably.
I mean, he's unreal.
Best pass rusher since Will Anderson last year.
Yeah, probably. But I'm going with the co-player of the week for this week. I mean, one offensive player, one defensive player. My offensive player will be from the University of North Carolina, Josh Downs. 11 receptions, 154 yards, and he had 3 total touchdowns. That's just a great stat line for him. Drake May's number one target. He's probably either wide receiver 1 or 2 for this upcoming draft if he declares. I mean, he's just got it all. He's fast, shifty. He's like a perfect NFL receiver. Then we're going with my defensive player of the week. We're going with Cameron Kitchens from Miami, who had 3 total interceptions and 8 total tackles, and he took one to the house for 99 yards. I mean,
those type of games you dream about when you're 9 years old in the driveway with the football. Yeah.
And Miami's been a disappointing team this year, but it's a little bright spot.
Yeah, I was about to say a very rare side of joy for Miami fans. Yeah. Out there. All right, we're gonna get into our positional rankings here, guys. What do you think? Do we go from 3 to 1, start at the bottom and work up, or do we start at 1, go down?
We can start from the bottom.
I agree. All right, we're gonna create some suspense here, starting with 3. We're gonna start with the QBs, quarterback. There is so many. This is a really tough one to make. You can't go wrong with some of these guys, and all of these guys are
great. Some of them are going to be great in the NFL as well, I think. Starting with one that I do think will be good in the NFL. My number three, I just don't know how y'all are going to make your list, so this may be a surprise to y'all, but my number three on the season, I'm going with C.J. Stroud out of Ohio State. 67% completion, 2,750 yards, 34 touchdowns to just 4 picks, and he has a 90.8 QBR, which is first in college football.
Yeah, I'd probably take Stroud for my number three is also. He just hasn't really had those big games, but he's still putting up the numbers, which is just off the charts. He's still putting up like 4 or 5 touchdowns a game. I mean, Northwestern game, I mean, didn't play good, but he still has 34 total passing touchdowns, which is insane.
One of my big reasons for having Stroud as low as three is also because he has the best receiving corps by far. I mean, one of the best of all time. Like, he has by far the best receiving corps in college football.
I'm going to go number three. A little different, but another team that is known for their very good receiving corps. I'm going to go with Hendon Hooker at my three spot. I think his loss against Georgia has maybe bumped him a little bit down for me on that QB rating of the year. But a guy who's really just come out of almost nowhere and taken a Tennessee team as far as they have, which they haven't been as good as they are since the early 2000s. I think that he's my number three.
All right, number two. I'm copying Braden here a little bit. I'm going with Hendon Hooker. Hendon Hooker at 71% completion percentage, 2,888 yards, 24 touchdowns, just 2 interceptions. Also has 400 rushing yards and 5 rushing TDs on the year. My only critique for Hendon Hooker, he could be a little bit better on the deep ball. But other than that, he's been electric, man. He has been great. He does have a very good receiving core, but he has been probably the most surprising quarterback in college football, right behind who I have at number one. But as for Hendon Hooker, man, he's done a great job. He's turned this Tennessee program around. Tennessee has probably one of the best, if not the best, offense in college football this year.
I'm going to be this one's going to be a surprise. It's not Hendon Hooker or it's not Bo Nix. It's going to be Michael Penix Jr.
Okay.
The leading pass yards currently in the NCAA. He's got over 3,600. He's got 25 touchdowns. The 6 interceptions, though. But he's still, I mean, people were sleeping on him this year, and he's really just proven everybody wrong. And he's slinging the rock. I mean, going into Autzen Stadium, winning that game last week, put him back on the map even more. If he just continues to finishes strong, I mean, it's like he could sneak into the draft maybe.
My number two spot here, another guy who's mentioned a lot in the number three, I'm going to go with Stroud as my number two. I think those 34 touchdowns, his passing yards don't get enough credit with that game against Northwestern. And then he has a great receiving core, but I think he is essentially almost as perfect of a quarterback as Bryce Young. Bryce Young, for me, is not on this list. I will say that. Bryce is a great quarterback, but this year, the offense of Alabama and his injury have kind of taken him out of that top three based statistics-wise for the season.
Yeah, definitely statistics-wise. I would still, a little bit of bias, I'd still rather have Bryce than any other QB in the country.
Yeah, I think if we're going by most valuable player-wise, it'd probably be Bryce.
Yes, I completely agree. Bryce Young is
Bryce Young has been able to do so much with improvisation or making plays out of plays that have already been dead
It's just the same thing that everybody calls him as a point guard pretty much.
That's a great way to put it.
He's just a four general pretty much.
It's hard to bring him down.
Now I'm curious to see if we all have the same number one here. I have Drake May out of UNC, probably one of the most surprising players of the year. Absolutely amazing year for Drake May. In one of the most electric offenses in college football. He has a 70% completion percentage, 3,400 yards, 34 touchdowns, tied with Stroud for most, just 3 picks. Also has 580 rushing yards and 5 rushing touchdowns. I mean, he is just crazy. He is a beast, and he has at least another year at UNC.
He's got another 2.
Yeah.
He's a redshirt freshman.
Oh, okay, so at least another 2 years at UNC. Absolute dog. Very well be holding up the trophy in New York at the end of the year.
Yeah, it just depends. That's who I have as my number one also. It's just that he's just taken over the keys of Sam Howell's position, and he's just been a complete upgrade. That's just been probably a big surprise to UNC fans.
Crazy to think, you upgrade from Sam Howell.
Yeah, he's a second-round either a second round or third round, one of those two quarterbacks. I mean, Drake May, he's just been torching teams left and right and keep winning them football games because their defense has just not been able to stop anybody. He's just still been putting up at least like 40-plus points almost every single game. It's just crazy.
Yeah, my number one spot, it's Drake May. It's not Stetson Bennett. Had to put a little suspense in there. Drake May has really come out of nowhere. You've heard us talk a lot about UNC's offense. I think he is a lot to blame for how good UNC's offense has been, especially in conference games. And just he's very consistent, even out of conference game. He seems to be sticking. When I looked at his stats against in-conference, out-of-conference opponents, they're pretty much deadlocked. He's not inconsistent. He plays consistent football. That's why he's number one.
Yeah. Drake May, unanimous number one on the 4th and Goal podcast. We're going to get into the running backs. This was another tough one. There is a lot of good running backs. It seems like there are every year. It's kind of hard to narrow it down to just three. But starting off at number three for me personally, I have a guy that's been my player of the week before. I think it was maybe the first episode of the show. I have Israel Amunikanda from Pittsburgh. He has 207 carries for 1,200 yards, 17 touchdowns, as well as a receiving touchdown. So 18 total touchdowns on the year for Izzy.
This might be a surprise. After looking at this dude's numbers, I'm going with Dwayne McBride from UAB.
Okay.
Birmingham.
Some Blazer love.
He has 1,400 rushing yards, 17 touchdowns, which is just
absolutely
insane.
Incredible. Yeah.
Incredible stats for UAB, especially after losing Bill Clark for them, that program.
I'm going to go over to the true freshman in Oxford, Quinchon Junkins. I think he is an unbelievable, almost the perfect running back. His freshman year, 15 touchdowns, averaging almost 6 yards a carry in the SEC, over 1,000 rush yards. I think he is going to be a force to be reckoned with, and this year he has proven that he is. He's going to be even better in the future.
All right, at number two, I have the Swiss Army knife himself. I mean, just does everything you can ask for in this Texas offense. I think he's going to be probably the first running back taken in the draft. It's Bijan Robinson. 204 carries, 1,158 yards, 12 touchdowns, 300 receiving yards, and 2 receiving TDs as well for Bijan. He has just been the staple of this Texas offense for the last couple of years, and I think that he is one of the most underrated players in the country.
Yeah, I think he'd be probably my honorable mention. I mean, he's insane, but his numbers aren't as good as this guy I've got coming up. The leading rusher currently in the NCAA, I got Chase Brown as my number two. He's got over 1,400 yards. He's got 7 touchdowns. I think what's keeping him from my number two, number one, is his rushing touchdowns. It's a little low.
My number two, someone who is possibly favored to win Heisman. I think Blake Corum is the number two running back in the country. I think he has 17.
Corum at two.
Corum at two, yeah.
That's bold. Hot take.
Hot take. I think Blake Corum is on a team that makes him very good. Bijan Robinson, again, is on a team that maybe isn't as strong, but if Texas is in that playoff race, I think he is obviously going to be in that talk for New York. I think the last couple of years we have seen the Heisman really only go to the college football playoff teams. So I have Blake Corum in my two.
All right, I got Blake Corum at number one. He's been great. He's kind of been force-fed a little bit at Michigan. He has 227 yards, or carries, sorry, for 1,349 yards, 17 rushing touchdowns, and a receiving touchdown. Yeah, like I said, he's been force-fed a little bit just because they don't really trust J.J. McCarthy to win them big games yet.
Yeah.
But I still think that he's been amazing nonetheless. Great running back. And, yeah, I would even go as far as to say, we'll get into it in a minute, but he has very good Heisman chances.
Yeah, I agree with Blake Corum. They've been feeding him the ball a ton, but I think that's warranted when you're dominating almost every single game and you're just controlling time of possession, especially if you don't trust your quarterback like that yet.
And for me, I'm going to go with the 6 foot, 220 pounder from Tucson, Arizona, Bijan Robinson, as
yes,
the
sir.
Best running back in college football right now. Like I said before, he's playing for a team that he maybe doesn't get as much spotlight as Michigan is in the Heisman hopes, but I think that Bijan Robinson, Although his stats maybe he's not getting fed the ball as much as Blake Corum because Quinn Ewers is such a good quarterback, and Texas does have good receivers. I think that Bijan Robinson with Michigan again, we talked about J.J. McCarthy maybe not being the best quarterback. I think that Bijan Robinson on a team like that would probably have 1,700 yards.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. I really do think that Bijan is the most talented running back in the country, and I do think NFL-wise he'll be the best out of any running back that's in the country right now. Moving on to our wide receivers, another tough one to rank. I feel like the top two spots are almost givens, but this number three spot is really interesting. I'm excited to see what y'all have. I have Xavier Hutchinson at number three from Iowa State. He has 97 catches, most in Division I FBS, by the way. 1,059 yards, 6 touchdowns for him. It just kind of sucks for him that Iowa State has maybe wasted his prime, probably one of their best receivers in program history. He's an absolute beast. I like him at number three.
Yeah, I got Josh Downs, North Carolina, my player of the week. He's got 74 receptions, 840 yards, 11 touchdowns, but he's been putting that – him and Drake May have just been putting that team on their back. North Carolina needs a first down, that's who they go to, and it's been almost a guarantee every time that he catches the ball. And he was good last year. I mean, he's just been on that same staircase, just keeps climbing up, getting better each year. Receiver class isn't that deep this year for the draft class. I'd probably give him wide receiver one maybe for that draft class.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I think Josh Downs is my number three receiver in college football right now. The one and two, I think we probably all will have very similar one and twos. Josh Downs is elite and probably somewhat to blame for the year that Drake May has had. Like you said, he's always making the big plays. So 11.4 yards a reception. 11 touchdowns. He's insane.
Yeah, Downs has been fantastic. As for my number two, I've got Jalin Hyatt, the Alabama killer from Tennessee. He's got 58 catches, 1,116 yards, and 15 receiving touchdowns. I'm pretty sure that's the Tennessee single-season record, and he's number one in Division I FBS for receiving touchdowns right now. 15 receiving touchdowns for Jalin Hyatt this year.
He is my number two. I'm going with Marvin Harrison Jr. at Ohio State. He's been phenomenal, especially when you got Ibeka. You got other playmakers around him like Julian Fleming. Not even Jackson Smith and Jigba. He's been out most of the year, and Marvin Harrison has been beyond the best receiver in that core, and he's got 60 catches for 900 yards and 11 touchdowns. He's only a sophomore this year, so he still has another year to just keep putting up insane numbers.
Yeah, I'm going to have to stick with the with Caden on this one and go with the Alabama killer and maybe hotel franchise owner Jalin Hyatt. he is just – no one – he came out of nowhere. Tennessee had – they had a very important injury go down. He has just came out of nowhere and proven that, just really maybe even the best receiver in the country to some people.
Yeah, he is just a stud. Really, like you said, came out of nowhere, has been great for this Tennessee offense that's, just so dominant this year. My number one, I'm going with Marvin Harrison Jr. I talked about how Ohio State has one of the best receiving corps in college football. He's the reason why. His athletic ability, his ability to high point the ball, come down, get a foot inbounds is absolutely amazing. He is super athletic. He's super fast. He's physical. He's everything you want in a wide receiver. He is going to be a top five pick next year probably in the draft. He's got 60 catches, 969 yards, and 11 touchdowns for the Buckeyes this year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with y'all's number two. I'm going with Jalin Hyatt. He's strictly because of the amount of receiving touchdowns he had, which is just absurd. We don't even think of a receiver having 15 touchdowns with still 2 weeks left in the regular season. And he's just been, and especially his probably average passing touchdowns probably 60 yards every time. So it's like, yeah, it's even more insane to think about.
Yeah, he is making big plays. But with my number one, I'm going to stick with the Buckeyes, and I'm going to go with Marvin Harrison Jr. I think that with how good Ohio State's receiving core is, he has just proven to carry that team again and again, especially in those close games like Penn State. It just felt like he was just getting mentioned every single play by the broadcasters, and usually that's a sign that when you hear – when someone gets their name mentioned a lot on TV, they're having a good game, and he's always getting his name mentioned on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to jump into the Heisman race now. As of right now, what's your top three, guys?
I think Stroud, Corum, and I mean, that could flip either way. Yeah. I think it's going to go Stroud or Corum. The three spot is very interchangeable, but I mean, I almost want to say Drake May, and I don't think so because he's not in that playoff race. That three spot is very maybe Hendon and Hooker.
Okay.
I'm probably going Corum, Drake May, and then CJ Stroud for my top three.
Yep, that's exactly
just
what
just
because
of numbers.
Have.
Numbers.
Maybe you could put Stetson Bennett in there too.
Yeah,
in the argument.
Stetson definitely could be looking in there. I do have Corum, Stroud, and Drake May. That's my top three, no particular order right now. Let's do our end of the year prediction for Heisman. Who do you guys got at the end of the year? If you had to put all your money on one person to win the Heisman right now by the end of the year, who are you going?
Drake May. We're going with Drake May.
I like it.
I want to add,
they just haven't.
I probably wouldn't put everything on Drake May. I'd probably put like
a little bit on Drake May.
A sprinkle, because most likely the realistic
odds are going to be
C.J. Stroud.
I think it's probably favored to be C.J. Stroud just because he's a quarterback in that playoff race.
And because he has that game against Michigan at home.
Yeah, they've got to beat Michigan. I think that Heisman is going to go to the winner of that game.
Yep.
Yeah. I have Drake May, so I'm going with Nick on this one. I do have Drake May right now. If I had to predict, I think I'm rolling with Drake May right now.
If the Michigan-Ohio State game is low scoring and...
If it's low scoring
and then Drake May has a
good
week...
It's just not going to be low scoring.
It just depends what Drake May does to Clemson.
I feel like Ohio State-Michigan is like rarely ever low scoring.
It's Michigan usually either gets blown out
it's either
or
Ohio State
45.
Wins by 40 or it's like a crazy like high scoring game. All right. We're going to get right into the Week 12 preview here. We're going to start with our dog of the week. Now, I am 0-5 in the dog of the week. So looking to change that this week, I'm going with Spencer Petras in this electric Iowa offense to cover the +2.5 spread against Minnesota on the road this week. I really don't know why Minnesota's favored in this one. It feels like Minnesota's lost basically every time they play in a decent or a big game. I think that Iowa has been getting better recently. You know, they had their big win against Wisconsin. I do think that Iowa's defense is amazing, and I think that'll carry them to a win this week.
My dog of the week. I was tempted to stick with the Midshipmen, but I'm going to go with Southern Methodist University against Tulane. Go for another one for the people, another big underdog. Last week, it almost paid off. This week, I think SMU maybe isn't. They've had a couple good teams in the past. Their offense is pretty good. Tulane coming off a loss is maybe going to be vulnerable. So I think SMU is going to come out.
Man, this one's tough. There's a lot of good games this weekend. But we're going back to the team who lost last week to the Huskies. My dog of the week. I'm 2-0 my last two, so take that.
Huskies as the dogs.
Yeah, Nick's hot right now.
We're going with the Oregon Ducks, bounce back spot. They're going to match out their kinks. They're going to face their fears with their struggles with in the past coaching staffs with Utah, and they're going to beat the Utah.
Nice.
Utah.
Yeah, at home.
Utah Utes.
Utes. Yeah, that's what it is.
Utes.
They're going to beat Utah Utes in Autzen Stadium for a bounce back, and pretty sure that'll clinch their spot. Pretty sure this is the game that clinched their spot in the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah. These two games, winner of the game. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, basically
guess
like a
Washington
final four deal
chance
for the Pac-12 this week. So
Washington's still in the running
for that. Yep. So, anyways, we're going to get into the pick 'em here.
Yeah,
after a big week last week. Nick bounces up to first again, 21-14 record on the year for Nick. If you don't know, we pick 7 games a week. I'm sitting at second with 20-15, not bad. And Nick is just a little bit behind, or sorry, Braden is just a little bit behind at 15-20.
I need a big week.
A big week.
Need to get back to over 500.
A little bit of a spoiler. We actually have 8 games this week instead of 7, so we have a little bit of a bonus game. So, great week for Braden to pick up some slack. We're gonna start with a Thursday night game. First time we've picked a game on a Thursday. We have Braden's dog of the week, SMU at Tulane. I think Tulane's favored by 3 in this one. Big game tonight. These are two really high-powered offenses. Tulane's got a solid defense. SMU doesn't really have one. But, you know, Tulane got a little bit of it, like, got exposed a little bit against UCF last week. Yeah. I think that they're going to crumble a little bit and have another stutter tonight, and I think SMU's going to beat them.
I think Tulane's going to bounce back. It's in New Orleans, the Green Wave. I think they will be celebrating Bourbon Street, because last week it was the Knights, because I said they were going to be celebrating Bourbon Street. This time, bounce back. Tulane Green Wave will be celebrating Bourbon Street tonight after this game on Thursday night.
Red, white, and blue is going to be celebrating in Bourbon Street after the game. Yeah, America, SMU for the win. I think their offense, Tulane didn't really look that good against UCF. They kind of got exposed, and I think SMU is another team with a really good offense.
And that's Braden's dog of the week.
Yeah, they are going to Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
They are going to Bourbon Street.
As you guys know, everybody's dog of the week is guaranteed except for mine. So.
That's right.
Moving into the Saturday slate, we're going to start with a morning game. We have Illinois at Michigan. Michigan's favored by 18. This is an Illinois team that's kind of crumbled a little bit. I'm looking for Michigan to win big here. I think that this is a battle of, you know, the two best running backs in the Big Ten, probably Chase Brown and Blake Corum. I do think that they're both going to have big games. I do like Michigan in this one. I don't know if they cover 18 is pretty steep, but I do like Michigan by probably 10 to 14-ish.
I definitely don't like 18 for an 11 o'clock game, but
yeah, I don't
think
either.
That Michigan's, it could be maybe a little trappy of a game,
yep.
But I think Michigan is definitely going to just keep the ball on the ground and find their way up.
Yeah, both teams are.
I feel like this is going to be a low-scoring game, or it's just going to be Michigan's defense just destroying.
Pass attempts. The whole game.
Because I don't think last week's game, I mean, Illinois against Purdue just did not do anything that game. And I think Illinois, if they want to beat Michigan, they're going to have to win through the ball, passing the ball.
Yeah, they're going to have to throw the ball. That's a big thing for them. So
that's how Michigan's got to beat Ohio State.
Going with the Wolverines. This could be a look-ahead spot, though. They could struggle for
that is
first
a great
half.
Point.
This could be a look-ahead spot.
For yeah, especially
game.
Also 11 a.m. kick, you know. Another 11 a.m. kick we got, that's another trap game. We have TCU going to Waco to play Baylor. TCU's favored by just 3 in this one, so this is back-to-back weeks now where Vegas is kind of leaning towards a TCU upset. You know, last week Texas was favored by like 7 against the Horned Frogs. But I do like the Horned Frogs in this one. I'm not super high on Baylor. They just got absolutely stomped by Kansas State last week. I don't think that TCU stomps them, but I do think that TCU wins, and I think they win by a convincing margin.
Yeah, another rivalry game.
Yeah,
got a lot of rivalry games this week.
Yeah,
I think 11 a.m. game is a trap game. I've picked against TCU so many times.
Exactly.
Hoping and praying for their downfall. So this time I'm going to pick them, and maybe it's gonna bring it to an end. But
I'm still praying on their downfall.
I'm praying on their downfall,
and it's going to happen this week. In Waco, Texas, Baylor Bears. Sick them.
I'm praying on their downfall, but I'm picking them.
Yeah. Sticking in the Big 12, we've got a 2:30 kick game. We've got Texas at Kansas. Texas is favored by 9 in this one, and it just screams trap game, boys. Texas obviously struggled offensively last week. Quinn Ewers had probably the worst game of his short career so far. And,
do we have a Jaden Daniels injury update?
Yeah, I actually am not sure, but I mean, really, their backup QB has been fine.
He's been good.
So, Kansas beat them last year in Texas.
That's right. Revenge spot, though.
You know, normally it feels like when upsets happen like this within the conference, they kind of happen back-to-back years. We've seen that a lot, and I'm sticking with it. I like Kansas in this one. Kansas hasn't really won, like, a big game yet this year. I think this is the one. I think this is the one they win this year.
I think Texas is going to bounce back. Quinn Ewers is going to have a bounce-back game. Bijan Robinson is going to have probably one of the best games of his career in Kansas this week. I think it's going to be closer than 9, though. I think it's probably going to be a higher scoring game.
Definitely high scoring.
Texas is going to come out on top.
I'm going to agree with Braden here. I'm going to go with Texas Longhorns, bounce back, hook 'em horns. I mean, Quinn Ewers cannot have a much worse performance than he did last week. That's positive for him, at least positive outlook for Quinn Ewers.
He can only go up. Yeah,
exactly. You can only go up from that, yeah.
And especially from last year, losing that game, I would not want to lose to Kansas 2 years in a row, but, I mean, Kansas is respectable this year, but still, Kansas, you don't want to take that
up. It's Kansas, yeah.
Nope.
All right, moving into the night slate of games here. We've got a 6:30 kick between Ole Miss and Arkansas, another one that has trap game written all over it. And second straight week where Vegas is kind of lean towards Arkansas pulling off a big upset. Ole Miss will travel to Arkansas. They're favored by 2.5. I think that they bounce back. I think Arkansas's defense is not good. And I think that Ole Miss is going to capitalize on that. I expect a big game out of Quinshon Judkins. I expect a big game out of Jonathan Mingo on the receiving end, and maybe even Zach Evans if he can get a boost in the carries. I do think that Arkansas will have their way on the Ole Miss defense as well. I think it'll be a close game. I think could be potentially a little bit higher scoring than most people think, but I am rocking with the Running Rebels in this one. I like Ole Miss.
I'm also rocking with the Rebs in this game down in Fayetteville. I think that Ole Miss's offense is probably be very similar to our game against Arkansas, where Arkansas maybe makes it close, somewhat high scoring, maybe between a touchdown at some point late in the game. I think Ole Miss is going to pull away late in the game. They just have too many weapons on offense.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with the Razorbacks here. But I think with the rumors,
straight weeks.
With the rumors with Lane leaving and stuff, I think that could be a little distraction to him.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
I just think if KJ Jefferson is playing this week, I think Arkansas is going to pull it off.
2 straight weeks that Nick has picked Arkansas to pull off the big upset. Will they let him down again?
I hope not.
We'll see. All right, moving in, we got the Pac-12 Final Four. Basically, that's what I've been calling it. 7 o'clock, at first we got USC at UCLA in the Rose Bowl. You know, hopefully UCLA can draw out a little bit of a crowd and maybe somehow find a way to get like a home field advantage thing going for them. That being said, I think I agree with what Braden said earlier. There's going to be a lot of red at that game, and I think that that's going to have a big impact. I like USC in this one. I'm pretty sure it is sold out, though.
I'm sure it is sold out. It's a battle between really who I think is going to go to the Rose Bowl.
Especially in the Rose Bowl stadium.
In the Rose Bowl, yeah.
Yeah.
But in the Rose Bowl, I don't know. I think it's going to be off crowd energy again. If UCLA can draw enough fans to outpower the USC crowd, I think USC is going to come out on top. Caleb Williams, that offense is very good. Although Thompson Robinson's offense, and if UCLA doesn't slip up like they did against Arizona and look like the UCLA team that they have all year, they'll have a shot. But they need that crowd energy, and I don't think that they're going to have it.
Yeah, man. Thompson Robinson, I like him and Charbonnet. I think they... UCLA is going to get a bounce back win, signature win for Chip Kelly. This game could be either way. It's just going to depend who has the ball last, I feel like. I feel like this could be a high scoring game, too. Both defenses.
Most definitely.
Just not very good. I'm surprised this game isn't played in a neutral site game. I mean, they need to move this game to SoFi.
That would be electric.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
I can see that happening at some point, too.
We have the latter of the two big Pac-12 games this week. This one's Utah at Oregon, a true home game for Oregon. They're in Odson. And, yeah, I like the Big O on a bounce back this week as well. Oregon is favored in this one, I'm pretty sure.
Utah's favored.
Utah's favored? Okay. So Utah's favored? Yeah, I don't like Utah in this one. I like Oregon. I think that Oregon is still a good team. I just think they had a little bit of a slip-up last week. So I'm rocking with the Ducks in this one.
I am also rocking with the Ducks. I think they've struggled against Utah in the past, especially in those big games, Pac-12 championships. Utah seemed to have their number. I think that eventually they got to get tired of it. I think Bo Nix is going to have a bounce-back game. Oregon's offense is going to bounce back. It's going to be another game that's just going to be in the 40-40. Probably put the mortgage on the over of the game.
No, yeah, really. It's only the over is only 62. The over under is only 62.
Really?
So that is low. I mean that is pretty low.
Like, I mean, this is my dog of the week, so obviously taking Oregon, Bo Nix back, bounce back game for him. Yeah. I mean, he really didn't play bad last week. It's just their defense, the defensive bounce back performance to stop Cam Rising and Dalton Kincaid and that offense. I think that crowd's going to make the difference for this game. I think it'll be coming down the last possession. It's going to end the East Coast to be watching this game, trying to stay awake. It's going to, I mean, could be a game-winning drive for Bo Nix to seal his legacy at Oregon. Could be.
Yeah, and the line is actually Utah by 2 in this one. So here's our bonus game. We got a big one, an all-time rivalry here. Our very own Braden Friedman will be in attendance for Stanford at Cal, the battle of the best 3-7 teams in the country.
That's right.
Braden, let's hear your analysis first.
My analysis, I think it's a very similar one to USC-UCLA. I think it's got to be – it's a battle of two fan bases that have struggled to fill their stadiums this year.
Yep.
I think that Stanford might be a little bit better of a team than Cal. I think Cal will have home field advantage. Cal has not beat Stanford since 2008 at home, so definite field storming potential at this game. I think that Cal's offense maybe as a team, both teams really have struggling secondaries and struggling offenses. It's going to be low scoring. We usually talk about high scoring games. I think this is going to be a low scoring game. A lot of field goal. I think it's just going to be a lot of incomplete passes.
Yeah.
A lot of incomplete passes
and
holding calls.
Yeah.
And it's just going to, that's usually how it goes at these games. I think Cal, well, they should come out on top, but it's been a long time since they've done it at Memorial Stadium.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, just for the vibes here, we're going with Braden's.
Yeah.
Braden's vibes here, we're going with Cal. I like Jake Plummer. Jake Plummer's actually just
he's
been
not
a,
bad.
He's been, I mean, they almost beat USC. I think Stanford, I mean, Stanford's not very good, especially if they want to move on from David Shaw. So I'm going to take the Cal Bears.
Yeah, their ground game's good with Ott, too. I think if they keep the ball on the ground, they might be fine.
Yeah, how about them Bears? Yeah.
You need to study the mascots.
Yeah, another pick just strictly off vibes. You know, everything tells me I should probably go with Stanford in this one, but I'm not. I'm going with Cal. Cal's had a really good defense this year. Stanford's kind of on the fall. I think that David Shaw's days are about to be done. We could see them mutually part ways. But yeah, why not? Let's just go Cal in this one.
Yeah, David Shaw's about to be back on the golf.
It always feels
back on
like
the golf course with Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Back on the golf course.
Yeah.
It always feels like that Cal finds a way to not come out with this game, though. So.
That being said, we'll see y'all again in 2 weeks. Obviously going to take next week off for Thanksgiving, but we will be back.
I think
the
we can all say
week.
That we're picking Alabama to beat Auburn.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I think we can say that too.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yep, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy holidays in the upcoming weeks.
And that's all we got today. So I'm Caden Johnson.
I'm Braden Friedman.
I'm Nicholas Elliott.
This is the 4th and Goal Podcast signing off.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.